Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Dream Elite Radio with your host, David Potter.
David Potter!
Mr. David Potter!
Welcome. Hey, how's everybody doing tonight? Welcome to the first edition of Dream Elite Radio podcast. My name is David Potter. If you couldn't hear from the great intro that my friend Rich did, thank you very much, by the way, for doing that. That was really cool. This is our first edition of Dream Elite Radio, and I'm very, very excited because today we have our special guest coming in, and one of my favorite fighters growing up, too, by the way. Before I let him on the air, I just want to tell everybody that he is one of the legends and one of the people that was revolutionary when he came to the sport. He was one of the original guys. He is a UFC Strikeforce Pride veteran. He's a former WFA welterweight champion, icon middleweight champion. He beat Jason Mayhem Miller, who we all know. MMA legend, and again, I can't say enough, one of my all-time favorite fighters. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to give you Frank Trigg. Frank, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Thanks for that intro, too. That was great.
Yes, Frank, I have to tell you, I was so starstruck that your publicist and your person that works with you got back to me. I've been a fan of yours since 2001, since tape trading, and the whole thing that we used to do before YouTube, and Pride 8, and watching you knock out that guy in the first round. I've been a huge fan of yours, and it is an honor to be speaking to you, Mr. Trigg.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Actually, that the guy in Pride 8 was Fabiano Iha, and actually Fabiano and I are now really close friends. I see him every week when I'm in L.A., which is, it's funny how the world kind of comes back full circle. And I got a pretty awesome executive assistant that when I put stuff on her, she's like, "Oh yeah, you need to do this. You haven't done anything on that side of the coast in a while. So go and do it, get this interview done." So it's been great, a great tour. You were actually watching stuff before pay per views. We had to wait for the VHS tape to come out and to watch it before you couldn't actually see it on TV yet.
Very cool. Very awesome. I just wanted to know, since you've been away from the cage for so long, you've been away since 2011, what I want to know as a fan of yours and someone who's respected your work for so many years since a child, I just wanted to know, since stepping away from the cage, what projects, of course, as an innovator and as somebody who has been involved with the sport, especially when it went through its dark days and it went underground and then it came back up, I just wanted to know, what current projects have you been working on as far as, you know, I've heard about your movie that you're working on right now, but what else has been going on with you? I know you always contributed to the sport, and you've been interviewing people, and you've been interviewing some of the growing names of UFC and everything like that, but tell us, what's been going on in the world of Frank Trigg?
Well, as far as MMA is related, I've been doing a lot of interviews, obviously, for MMA Oddsbreaker, the interview upcoming fighters, you know, they're getting ready to fight here within the next, you know, next week or so, and we do an interview with them and kind of just check on how training camp's doing and what family life is all about, and then depending on the fighter, we sometimes get off topic quite a bit. Like Darren Cruikshank and I were sitting around talking about guns because we're both gun fanatics. So we're talking about weaponry and the shooting that he's doing. And he actually challenged me to a handgun competition. You know, like an urban assault. You go in and you clear a room and for time and for placement. So we got that challenge going on. It's like someone in Michigan. We did that with Darren. And then when I was on the phone with Chael Sonnen, we actually, like, the whole interview was talking about the world championships in wrestling, you know, just, so it just depends. Like, sometimes these interviews get way off of the main topics. You guys start talking about cars and girls and all sorts of crap, so I think it's all over the place. But it's actually kind of frustrating to me as far as MMA goes. And I believe that I'm a pretty good commentator when it comes to color commentating and being in that spot. For those of you who don't understand at home, you usually have two people commentating, talking about the sport. You know, like if you watch UFC, it's Goldberg, it's Mike Goldberg and Joe Rogan. Well, Mike Goldberg is the play-by-play announcer, and then the color commentator is Joe Rogan. Well, you know, I'm very good at being the color commentator in Joe Rogan's position, but it's been weird where I haven't been able to get any jobs in that fashion at all, nothing at all in MMA. So what had happened is that I basically said, well, I got to find a way to work. I got to feed my family up in the next logical step. Obviously, especially when you've been friends with Randy Couture for 22 years, you kind of follow in his footsteps. And so I moved into acting and stunt work. And so that's what earlier you talked about, Any Which Way to Come, the movie that I'm getting ready to shoot. We actually leave on October 3rd, start filming on October 5th down in Austin, Texas. We'll be down there for 3 weeks. That's actually a pretty good project. I'll get back to that here in a second. And so I was kind of felt like I was on the outs with the MMA world. I felt like I was really being pushed to the side, and that no one really understood my value and how much I wanted to get back to my sport. The sport made me famous, and it did it through the dark days, and there wasn't very many people watching, and my fans. My haters are my haters. They're going to hate me forever, and they're very loyal to being haters of mine. My fans are my fans as well, and they're very loyal to being fans of mine. So I wanted to find some way to help keep getting back to the sport. So I went and took Big John McCarthy's command course, and I'm certified under Big John McCarthy to referee and judge in the sport of MMA throughout the country. Now it becomes a question of me getting licensed within the states. I've been working with ISKA here in Nevada, and I've been working with CAMO, which is the California Association of Amateur Mixed Martial Arts, and I've been working with them as well. And then within, a couple of years, it takes, they want to make sure you have a lot of reps and a lot of fights in, and I'll get moved up to state-sanctioned body. I'm trying to get sanctioned right now in Hawaii, the ref and judge, when I'm over in Hawaii. And when I'm down in Texas, I'm going to talk to the commissioner when I'm in Austin about me getting licensed in Texas as well. So really for MMA, what I've been doing is the interviews I do with the fighters and then reffing and judging the amateurs as we get ready to come up. And it's been so exciting. It's been so much fun. And it's just for me to get back. Like, people understand, like, my intensity for wanting to, why people aren't hiring me to be a commentator. It's not the money involved. It's not the time on TV. It's for me to get back and explain to the folks at home and the new fans we have of MMA what is really happening in the fight, what's really going on. From a fighter that's actually been in there since when the rules were a little bit different. When we could stomp on guys' heads, when we could sock and kick them in the face, when we could, we could do all these really random things that they've changed because of fighter safety, and I have a true understanding of it. And to be honest with you, there's no other real commentator out there, including Pat Miletich, who's on Access TV, who took over my position on Access TV, that understands it as well as I do, because I'm current.
Correct.
I'm still training with everybody. I worked out with the guys from Neil Melanson, who's Dominic Cruz's coach, and if you watched the UFC last night, Dominic Cruz is back and was amazing. And Neil Melanson is my black belt coach. Randy has a black belt underneath him as well. And I worked out with him yesterday, and I worked out with all the guys, all the BCG guys yesterday. And, like, I'm still training and learning and teaching and trying to figure stuff out, where a lot of these other guys are commentating either never fought ever in their lives in the sport, but just fans of the sport, and they have jobs. And the other group that did fight have kind of stopped really paying attention to what's going on. They're really not learning the new spaces and the new sequences. And so for me, MMA has been a little frustrating over the last couple of years. They'd be quite honest with you.
Absolutely. And touching upon you being a commentator, I remember you commentating for Pride, and to be completely honest with you, you were the best commentator since Stephen Quadros to go out of that promotion. I mean, the situations, the peculiar situations, you're so well at explaining and breaking down to a T the fighter's options, especially from in the guard or outside the guard, or you're so well spoken as far as talking is concerned, and you were, in my opinion, when you were in Pride, you were one of the best commentators since Stephen Quadros when he left. Just touching upon the fact that you were in Pride, even when MMA went underground and you fought for Pride 8 as before, what was it like fighting the MMA boom? It was still popular. Business was still booming in Japan and Brazil with Alec Tudo was always going on. But what was it like fighting in Pride when, MMA didn't really come up from underground yet? But what was it like fighting for pre-Sakura Bar? What was it like fighting for Dream when you were fighting for Pride 8 and fighting for that promotion?
For me, it was surreal. When I started working for Pride, I got a phone call from a buddy of mine, Triata Vila, who actually runs the University of MMA now, an amateur promotion that runs out of California. He was actually working for Pride at the time, and he called me and said, "Hey, do you want to come to this fight?" I thought he wanted me to fight for them. He said, "No, we need a commentator that can cover some of our shows. Boss Rutan can't fly over as much anymore. He's trying to do more video or more movies. We need to come cover a couple of the slots every year. Could you do it?" I was like, "Yeah, I'd love to go to Tokyo all the time and cover these fights." And it was surreal to me because I started fighting for them. And for me and my generation, my guys, like, all the money was being made over in Japan. That's where it was, because all the fights were being held over there. The real money was over there for us. That's the most amount of money I ever made was fighting for Pride. It was for me, that's how it worked out. So when I was able to commentate for them, it became like this whole really – I was on this canvas fighting with these referees and these judges calling my fight, and all of a sudden I'm in the broadcaster's booth doing the exact same thing. It was amazing. I was a little awestruck when I went over there, because I got to see guys like Fedor and Krokop and Nakajira and Nakanami and Takada and Fry and Coleman and Randleman, and all these guys fight right in front of me. It was crazy for me to be doing that. And then to fight him myself, it was an amazing experience, and something that probably one of the highlights of my life. And actually, I told one of my buddies the other day that I actually kind of miss Tokyo. I miss not going over there. I've been over there 40 I lost count. It was 38 times or 42 times. I can only get the number right, but I've been over there 38 times or 42 times. And every time I go over, it's amazing. It's like, it's a city that never goes to sleep. It's always light. It's always neon. It's great. And also, too, I had a little bit of celebrity over there, which was great. It was amazing for me because a lot of people knew who I was from fighting. And even though I was doing the American broadcast, a lot of people still knew who I was. So I'd be dressed in my suit and walking up and down and running to the bathroom and running to get something to drink or something to eat in between, when they have the breaks or before the shift starts, whatever, and having to sign autographs and take pictures with people that can't speak English and I can't speak Japanese. And it was incredible. It was an amazing time to fight over there in Pride. And to be quite honest with you, I was very, very, like, it hurt my soul when the UFC bought Pride and shut it down. I thought for sure they were going to buy it and let it run for another couple of years and then absorb it and let the Japanese fans know, hey, the UFC is here. We own it. We're going to let it run. We're going to let things go on. And that was going to happen. And when they had to shut it down for a lot of different reasons. It was only financial, but it was also the way that the Japanese MMA world has actually worked, that they had to shut it down and restart themselves. And I don't fault them for that, but it hurt my soul because it was like, one, let's be honest, I was on Fox Sports back before the new set of Fox Sports. I was on Fox Sports back in the day. And sure, I'm on pay-per-view once a month. I'm going to Japan once a month. I have a full-time job working for these guys. I do nothing but watch fights. I go to L.A., once a month to shoot four shows half-hour shows with Jay Glazer and Beyond TV. And it was incredible. It was one of the best times of my life for sure.
Absolutely cool. And you know what, too? Like, and you had such a good reputation in the game. You went to WFA, you won the title, and right when you came back when you went to the UFC, you got an immediate title fight. But I got to ask about that, because I've always wondered since 2003, when you got the immediate title fight and you started to, with the UFC, because that's when the boom started happening. This is, you fought Matt Hughes, you fought for the title, got the immediate title fight. And then 2005, you got a title fight again, and this is when the boom was finally happening, finally in the United States. An audience was finally catching on. Did you ever think in your career, because you started in 1997, I'm sure you started before that, I just got to know, did you ever think that the sport would get to this height? And your fight, too, when I was so proud of, because I'm a little guy myself, but the welterweight fight, everybody was talking about. That welterweight title fight, Matt Hughes, Frank Trigg, too. I couldn't go anywhere without hearing about it when it was happening. But did you ever think that MMA would ever reach such heights, especially as you being a pioneer and one of the guys who brought up the sport when it was down and out?
I never thought the sport would be this big. And the only person, to be honest with you, that really thought the sport was going to be this big was Dana White. And everybody else can say whatever they want to say about it. I knew the sport was going to be this big, and also the crap, they're all liars. Dana White was the only one that knew the sport was going to be this big. And you can love or hate him. There's a lot of fighters, especially Vanderlei Silva right now, has got a big argument going on with Dana and how he treats his fighters. And I've been very vocal about, especially me, like, I can't get tickets to the fights. I'm a kind of person on the outside. Part of it's my ego. I'm upset. I'm a little bitter because I am a guy that's very loyal to come in that pays for me and takes care of me. And I don't understand why the UFC has these other guys commentating and don't have me in it. But you have to understand, Dana White was the only one that knew that UFC, that MMA as a whole was going to be this big as it is now. And he knows for sure that the sport's going to be bigger. We always make fun of him because he boasts and says these things, these outrageous things that you like, oh, you know, one year we're going to throw in 100 fights in a year. We'll be throwing fights on multiple nights and multiple continents in one night. Like, oh, you're nuts. It'll never happen. It'll never happen. Well, lo and behold, you know, just 6 months after he said it, it started happening. But just 2 weeks ago, they had a fight. They had one fight in England, one fight in Australia. It was like, you know, back-to-back nights. It was ridiculous. Then they're having one in America. You know, they're throwing like 52 fights a year right now. And every year it increases. You know, so like they're on their way to throwing 100 fights in a year. It's with the tough finale and with the tough shows. And it's incredible. And to be honest with you, I couldn't even, in my wildest of dreams, my biggest imagination, I never would have thought the sport would be as big as it is right now. And as big as it's, and I can't even dream of how big it's going to be. My biggest goal right now is to be reffing on one of those cards. A lot of the guys that reffed last night that were in Las Vegas, Nevada, they were reffing. When Dom McCruz was out there and Demetrius Johnson was fighting and James Krause was fighting. All these guys were out there fighting. These refs I work with on every couple of weeks I'm working with them in the amateur events here in Las Vegas, and they're reffing the big shows. And it's now it's like, okay, my dream is to be on one of the big shows with these guys, and it's going to be crazy. It's going to be 95,000 fans watching these guys fight. It's going to be, you know, 1.5 million people, you know, watching on pay-per-view. It's going to be 3, 4, 5, 6 million people watching at home on Fox Sports, and it's going to happen in the next 3 years. It's incredible how fast the sport is growing. But I never, if you find an interview, I said, I knew this sport was going to be this big, I was a liar. Like, nobody knew it was going to be this big except for Dana White. He's the only one that actually had the vision and the understanding of how to grow the sport, how to make the sport happen. And you really, the reason why the sport is this big is because Dana White just will not say no and just will not back off. He believed it was going to happen and be this big, and we're all the benefit of it.
And you know what? You're one of the elements that helped build that sport, especially the welterweight division. Yeah, I can't mention any of the, like, Hayato Sakurai, Matt Hughes. I can't name any of those fighters in that division without naming your name. And you were part of that element to build the sport to what it is today. But you did it all. You fought in Pride. You did commentary. You won the Icon Championship, won the WFA Championship. You fought for Strikeforce. You fought for all of the major promotions, UFC, name it all. But is there anything at this point that you feel you haven't accomplished, or anything? If you could do it, if you can do it again now, is there anybody that you would see in your eyes that you would want to fight, or anything that you would want to accomplish, or what would be, if you can do it all again, what would be your goal, or is there anything you feel that you haven't accomplished yet?
Well, it's funny because I was actually talking to Joe, and we're doing some goal setting. And my problem is, I always set these goals. They're astronomically out of reach. They're impossible to reach. From very little, I set a goal to be, I want to be an Olympic champion. And I set that goal, and then I knew all the little steps it took to get there. But my only vision is the big goal at the end. I would do all the little steps to get to that position, but I was only concerned with getting to the big goal at the very top of the mountain. I never made the Olympics, so as a result, I was never an Olympic champion. But I won. You know, I was on the Olympic ladder for 5 years in freestyle wrestling. I pushed myself up to the top level. I was a little nothing under technique guy that was just had a lot of heart and a lot of guts and would just try to go as hard as he could. And I kind of put myself in that space. And I always said I wanted to be the UFC champ because that is the biggest promotion and was the biggest promotion when I was still fighting. It is the biggest promotion, will be for 10, 15 years to come. No one's going to rival him. And I always wanted, if I had to do it all over again, it was obviously to win that second fight with Matt Hughes, because most people in their life, they can't go back and look. If I turn left, I'm a millionaire, but if I turn right, I'm going to be struggling trying to figure out my next step in life. When I lost to Matt, that made me go right. It made me go to the right side. If I won that fight against Matt, the second fight, I would be a millionaire right now, because I would have had the confidence and the attitude and the ego that would have put me on the top and kept me on the top for 5, 6, 7 fights in a row. I would have been a champ until GSP got into his major prime. You know, we would have had that, we would have battled, I would have beaten the first time, and then, you know, he probably would have came back in the second time as a better athlete and beat me at that time. But at that point, there would have been 7 or 8 title defenses. I'd be in the hunt. I would have had pay-per-view money. I would have been. So I had to do it all over again. It would be to be that guy, to be the champ, you know, one time in the UFC and reach that ultimate goal of being the top end. You know, it seems like every major goal that's just out of reach, I always fall short of it because I forget that I did all the other little goals to get there. Like, I made, you know, starting lineup of a Division I wrestling team. I made it into the point where people still talk about me. You know, if you are ever in the arena for a UFC fight, in the very beginning at 7 o'clock, right when the pay-per-view has got the little announcements that all the people at home are watching, there's a movie sequence that runs on the inside, and it runs Teenage Wasteland by The Who is the song that they play, and I still can't stand that song. Every time I hear it, I have to change the radio station or make people shut off their iPod because it drives me crazy. But in the sequence, it's always about the fighters are going to fight that night and a couple epic battles from the last 12 months or so. Me hitting Matt, knocking him down, taking his back, and putting sliding that rear naked choke in the second time that we fought, is still in that video. And then him picking me up, running me across the ring, slamming me down, and then finishing me with a rear naked choke is still in that video. So everybody else, Liddell, Couture, Ortiz, Jardine, Fletcher, like everybody else that's out there, has all been removed except for Hughes and I, and everything else is current fighters that are still battling it right now. They still keep that sequence in there because of Dana White, that's his favorite fight of all time. So when you're looking at things, you're like, wow, like that fight was just an epic battle, and it still lasts the test of time even now. I just wish it had been flipped over and that I had won instead of losing.
And you know what? You might have not won the UFC championship, but in my eyes, you're truly a legend, and in plenty of MMA fans' eyes, you are still a legend and a hero of the sport. We're actually going to wrap this up, but can you tell us where your fans can actually find you, where we can actually, especially where we can find all of your interviews with fighters and what you're going to be doing next?
Well, on MMAOddsBreaker.com is where all my interviews are, and it's called, the segment's called Toe to Toe with Trigg. It's usually a Skype interview, so it's video, and it's just me chit-chatting with the fighters and talking, you know, from one fighter to another. I get a little more respect than most of the other fighters, than the other interviewers do, so I get away with a lot of stuff that, you know, I can ask them about, you know, what were you thinking and stupid stuff like that, and why would you do that, is it dumb, And so I get away with a lot more people, a lot more than what other interviews I get away with. I get away with that. And then it's on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, it's all at Frank Trigg. It's all one word. On Facebook, I'm full. I apologize. I get yelled at every day. Why don't you add me? You know, I've been a fan of yours since 2001. You're such a dick now because you won't add me. On my personal page, I'm full. I'm well over 5,000. I'm like it. 5,100, and Facebook only allows you to have 5,000, so I'm always in that little weird little glitch. But my fan page is Frank Toe Trigg. If you go in like that, I spend a lot of time on there answering fans. I talk back as much as I can. On Instagram, it's just at Frank Trigg, that's me. On Twitter, it's at Frank Trigg, it's me. I'm the one that answers it. I'm the one posting stuff. I'm the one, like, if something is on there, it gets posted, and it gets deleted later, because of, you know, the John Jones disease. Oh, somebody else hacked my account, and I don't know what they were talking about. Like, that doesn't happen with me. It's my account. I'm the one that does it. I take full responsibility of everything that's said on there, and the views that are on there are my views and me alone. And on Instagram, if you don't like the guy that posts pictures of food, I post a lot of food pictures of our kids, of Jill and I out all the time running around and just having, of a Vegas lifestyle, like just having fun and enjoying life and being happy with each other, then you don't want to follow me on Instagram. That's what we post a lot on that. Because it's like last night, my son, a 21-year-old son, it's the first time he's been in Vegas since he turned 21.
Oh.
And he's in town with us. And so we're like, I want to show him, like, this is what your dad does. This is the hustle your dad has to do all the time. And he's like, your hustle is horrible. Like, your hustle is going out to a club and meeting with a producer, meeting with a director, and meeting with somebody, meeting with friends, and just to be seen. Like, this is, like, how is this a hustle? Like, this is how it works in Vegas. So I've been out quite a bit, and a lot of people are like, oh, you gotta stop posting all your food pictures. Well, I like food. I'm a fat kid. I love food, so this is why I post them. So, but yeah, but all that stuff is me. It's all me. There's no one else talking, so when you get an answer back, if you hit me with something, I'm the one answering back, not somebody else, not my assistant, not my publicist. It didn't get hacked. I said it. So if I tell you to F off, I'm telling you to F off. If I'm telling you I'm gonna come to your kitchen and stab you out with a pencil, I'm telling you that. It's not somebody else. So never think that, and I talk to everybody. If you get disrespectful, I mean, if you're going to ask serious questions and get amped up, I get that. But if you're going to be disrespectful to me, I'll just block you, and I'm just going to talk to you. But if you really want to ask me questions and really get to know me a little bit better, I absolutely answer back every fan I can as quickly as I can.
Correct. Absolutely. And thank you very much, Frank Trigg, for joining us. Thank you very much for talking to me. Again, you're a pioneer of the sport, and you're one of my heroes on a personal level. So I want to thank you so much for joining us on the show, and it's been a true honor of talking to one of the heroes of the sport. So thank you very much, Frank Trigg.
Thank you so much for having me on. I hope we get to do it again soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, Frank. That was Frank Trigg. And, okay, so I got to be honest. I don't normally get starstruck. The last time I went to a UFC event and I met Forrest Griffin and met, like, BJ Penn, and I'm name-dropping, but I met all these names. But Frank Trigg, he's one of the guys that I really looked at, especially as a small guy like me, because I'm a tiny guy. But looking at Frank Trigg, he was always a hero of mine. So talking to him was just, I'm finally starstruck. I got starstruck talking to Frank Trigg. He's an amazing guy. Visit all his links. Visit him on social media if you want education on the sport, because he did a lot of commentary too through Pride. And listening to him talk, he is so educated on the sport, it's ridiculous. And talking to him finally got me, finally got starstruck. And this is the same guy you're talking to that met Mike Tyson and all these guys. Frank Trigg was the guy that did it for me because I watched him since I was a kid. But great guy, great interview, and Frank Trigg is still contributing a lot to the sport. This was a great summer talking about UFC for fights. Last night's card was great. I mean, my guys that I met, like John Howard and Chris Tarriasso, they didn't have a successful evening, but it was still a great night of fights. Before it was Floyd Mayweather had a terrific boxing bout. A lot of people will complain that it was a lot of running, but they're ridiculous considering that Muhammad Ali did the same kind of strategy 30 years prior. So that was a great bout. This was a great the sport is constantly evolving, and the summer proved it. And, you know, it was just a great summer. And Frank Trigg is still in the mix, still a part of building these sports and still involved in building these combat sports, which is I still appreciate. And it's always cool talking to your heroes, and they live up to your expectations, and Frank Trigg was no different, and he was super cool. But next week we're going to have World Series of Fighting Showtime. He's going to be on the show. We're going to be interviewing him. Also, Kelly Lynn, one of my favorite girls on the planet, she's also going to be on, so I can't wait to talk to her. And a lot of good vibes. And I've got to touch on something, by the way. So before we end the show, I just want to tell everybody that this summer, too, was unfortunately, Robin Williams passed away. And due to suicide, which is a touchy subject to me because my best friend committed suicide and passed away. But, you know, that depression and suicide took center stage and everything like that. And, you know, it broke my heart when I heard about it. And, you know, this was kind of a touchy issue for me. Kind of hit me the wrong way. And, well, you know, it touched a chord. Who can blame me, you know? So, just one takeaway from the show, if you don't dig mixed martial arts, if you don't dig boxing or anything like that, one takeaway you can take from the show, but you can spread around positivity this week. You know, talk to people. You know, you never know who needs it, so talk to everybody. Spread some love around. You know, keep those positive vibes going. You know, this was the summer that we lost one of the biggest celebrities in the world, and due to a issue that was kind of swept under the rug for so long. But, speaking of summer, that was a big issue and that was a big thing that happened. So one takeaway you can take away from the show, if you don't dig MMA, if you're just listening because you like me, and I appreciate if you do, just spread some love around, spread some positivity around, enjoy your week, you know, give a compliment to. It won't kill you. I mean, you never know who needs it. So but some positive vibes will be around next week, and I really appreciate everyone that listened in. I really appreciate Frank Trigg for joining me, and thank you very much for listening to Dream Elite Radio for the first edition. My name is David Potter, and thank you very much. It's an honor talking to everybody. Have a good night, guys.
With your host, David Potter.
David Potter.
Welcome to Dream Elite Radio with your host, David Potter.
David Potter.
This is David Potter. something special in the you since I met you. And I'm never gonna let you go. Said I'm never gonna let you go. Cause you're a keeper.